Hello and welcome to another episode of the Prop Swap Podcast. We are your hosts, Ian Epstein.
And Luke Pergandy.
And we are also the founders of Prop Swap, the first marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We've got another great episode for you. We will touch on a little NHL and NBA as those playoffs have begun. But first, it is NFL draft week. One of the favorite weeks for bettors, not so much for sports books. Sports books hate this event, mainly because the odds move so much based off of information that can come out at any time, right? It's not like injury information in the NFL where it comes out at a certain time. You know, information from anywhere can drop at any point in time. Sometimes that information is reliable, sometimes it's not. But regardless, sports books have a very tough time making money when odds move so drastically. And the bettors know the moves before the sports books do. So before we get into that information stuff, here is a clip from a recent interview with the owner of Circa Sports, Derek Stevens, talking on VSiN about how he feels about taking bets on the NFL draft. Take a listen.
Odds makers hate booking the draft.
Yeah.
Why do you hate booking the draft?
Now, I will tell you, as a football fan and a sports fan, I love the draft.
Sure.
I love the hope that every fan base has on draft night, other than Jets fans. I just love it. I love everything about it. But now that I'm in this sports betting business, I've come to the point where the draft is the worst day of the year. You cannot win.
Worst day of the year.
You cannot win. No matter what you do, everybody's complaining about this or that. And then we get smoked. I mean, this is like a donation.
So, Luke, what are your thoughts on Derek's comments about the draft and why sports books kind of hate this event?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. The information is not coming out in a uniform time. I think that's one of the biggest issues with this, is that it could come out at midnight. You know, this Zach Wilson trade, not that that's super relevant, but they're, you know, exchanging picks. Comes out on Monday at noon central, but then, you know, McCarthy or some Vikings trade can come out at 1 a.m. on a Tuesday night heading into the draft. So it's just super difficult to handicap this thing. And I was doing some homework before we started this podcast. You know, don't underestimate the amount of attention that gambling is getting in all these different sports recently. Of course, Porter in the NBA and Shohei's situation in the MLB. Like, I think the NFL is forcing teams to be really tight-lipped, so that can obviously go both ways. Like, it's just really difficult to handicap this thing for both gamblers and sports books. It's just it's a super tough event.
Yeah, and as I've talked about before in previous years, you know, some of this information is just complete BS, right? But it picks up steam, right? You know, one person posts something on Reddit, and then you know, it gets treated like, oh, because, you know, and it's like, well, no one, this guy's never posted anything ever before, but it's like, oh, well, that's just because, you know, he knows someone, right? He's not like a professional draft analyst. He has inside info, right? And then it picks up steam, and then the number starts moving, and then people start betting the thing just purely based off of the number moving, and that, and then maybe that information was completely bogus, but then the odds move so much on the guy that actually is going to get drafted, you know, to a big plus number. And then, you know, the books can get popped on that. So with that in mind, here are just a couple of the big odds moves that have taken place with the second and third picks overall. In late February, Drake May was minus 180 to be selected number two overall, and Jaden Daniels was plus 200. Today, Jaden Daniels is minus 340. To be selected number two overall, and Drake May is plus 350 at number two. And then around that same time, May was plus 180 to be selected number three overall, and now he's minus 110. So basically just a huge kind of swap, you know, no pun intended, between Drake May and Jaden Daniels in the number two and number three spots. Now, again, no one knows anything. If the Commanders take Drake May number two, I don't think anyone would be that shocked. But, you know, once people see the Jaden Daniels number start moving, then people just start piling on and the risk really accumulates. So, you know, if you're looking to bet this draft right now, you know, how would you suggest someone approaches it? If they have no inside info, you know, they're just looking at the same kind of mock drafts everyone else is looking at. Are you looking at those kind of top picks? Or, you know, I think the sharp bettors are looking more at, you know, over under draft position, you know, on maybe some of the non-quarterbacks or, you know, team to select a certain player. I know we talked about, I staked the Broncos to select J.J. McCarthy a bunch of weeks ago. And while those odds have improved, the Vikings are now a considerable favorite based off the fact that, you know, they traded Kirk Cousins since then and need a quarterback. But how would you approach, you know, betting the NFL draft?
Long shots would be my response. Longer odds, laying minus 350 when you don't have a clue. I think it's just a fool's game. I think back to the 2021 draft where Trey Lance was picked third overall. Like, that was stunning. Like, the whole, I just remember the gasp by the draft analyst, by myself, you, like, everyone was freaking out that the Niners would do that. It was a massive upset. So pick underdogs. An example would be first running back taken or first defensive lineman taken. There's that UCLA guy, Latu would be an example of that, where you can get like plus 300 or plus 250 on him, the UCLA defensive end, to be the first defensive player taken. So a couple examples like that, just going a little bit heavier on plus money versus laying minus 300 when it's almost impossible to predict this stuff.
Yeah. Two things. One, yeah, we had Doug Kazarian on the podcast a year ago, and he made some headlines when he basically spotted kind of a discrepancy in some of the markets that MGM was offering about first safety or first defense taken. And basically MGM had miscategorized a player or, you know, put a player in a group that he shouldn't have been in that group. He got a guy at 40 to 1 odds that hit. Second thing is, I'm kicking myself for not making J.J. McCarthy my quarterback riser this year. You know, I've talked before about how last year I was able to profit big time on Anthony Richards, as did some prop swap customers. And again, didn't go number one overall, but he shot up the draft boards. J.J. McCarthy is that person right now. Would you be shocked? I mean, with everything being reported at this point, would you be shocked if J.J. McCarthy went number three overall, whether to the Patriots or to a team like the Vikings trading up?
Yeah, not in the slightest. Not in the slightest. I mean, I could even see a world where he goes two, honestly. You know, I think Caleb Williams, everyone's in agreement with, he's a lock to go one, but I even think there's a 10% chance of him going two. I mean, like I said, Trey Lance going three absolutely shocked the world. So, yeah, I don't think that's out of the question. But I agree, much higher likelihood of him going three than two.
And I also think last year Richardson going number five was still a shock. Like, he had shot up, but like, once the first couple quarterbacks were off the board, it's like, okay, well, you know, he's probably going to fall like everyone's expected. And then it's like, nope, income Jim Irsay and the Colts and take him at number five.
Totally.
As you mentioned, one pick that seems pretty much a lock is the Bears staying put at number one and selecting Caleb Williams. Luke, as our resident Chicago expert, living in Chicago, from Chicago, what's the pulse of the city right now on the expectation of Caleb Williams being drafted?
I think people are excited. I think anytime you get the chance to have the first overall pick and draft a quarterback that will be our only quarterback basically on the roster, because we have shipped Justin Fields to Pittsburgh, is exciting. I like him. I think he's a little bit quirky in terms of his personality, but there's a lot of young, I think that's kind of just the whole that's a new generation of kids. They're just a little bit quirky, and that's totally fine. I don't care if you're quirky or you can have whatever personality traits you want. Just be a good quarterback. So I like him. I think it's exciting. Most of the debate now is who we're going to take at 9. My guess is they're going to trade back. They'll trade down further to get some capital and maybe get like a 15. But that's my guess. But that's now the buzz for the Bears is who they're going to take at 9. What are they going to do with the 9 pick?
Yeah. And look, they got Keenan Allen, you know, so you'd like to think hopefully that they're surrounding him with more talent than they did Justin Fields. Obviously, the offensive line has been an issue since I was born. you know, you're hoping that you draft Caleb Williams and you surround him, you put him in a spot to succeed. My fear is, you know, having watched this team my entire life, it's like, because I like Caleb Williams, but I almost feel like it's like Schrodinger's cat. And I was making this joke to someone prior to the Bears trading Justin Fields, because the big topic was, should they keep Fields and trade the pick or trade Fields and draft Williams? And it's like I almost feel like Caleb Williams would be a good quarterback on a non-Bears team, but will be a bad quarterback on Bears team, right? And so it's like, and if he is bad, they're gonna blame Caleb for it. But I'm sitting here being like, if he doesn't pan out, I'm just gonna blame the Bears. And you know, if Caleb went to a different team, it would be a different scenario. But that's just my pessimistic attitude towards it. And I'm hoping that he does well. I've liked him for, you know, since the last 2 years. I thought people judging him off of USC's record this past year was unfair. The defense stunk. He was forced to win games, you know, himself and made decisions, you know, because he knew he had to score 50 to win the game. So I think he's got all the right tools to be a great NFL quarterback. Unfortunately, though, that seems to be probably the most exciting thing going on in Chicago is this draft, because and, you know, maybe Cubs aside, but,
yeah,
you know, from everything I'm hearing and reading, you know, the White Sox, you know, are just kind of the joke of the town. And then you couple that with the Bulls's, you know, just you know, year after year mediocrity, right? The Bulls have been in the worst place you want to be in the NBA, which is mediocre, right? You either want to be really good or really bad. And now granted, this year's NBA draft is they're calling it the worst in years. So it's not like they're potentially missing out on a great lottery pick, but you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that both the White Sox and the Bulls owned by the same person, Jerry Reinsdorf, who, you know, has won many championships in Chicago, obviously 6 with the Bulls, one with the White Sox in 05. But he does not seem like he's invested, you know, to the same degree as some of the other owners who seem to be successful. But what's your take and what's kind of the pulse in Chicago about the White Sox and Bulls?
Yeah, I think people are fed up with the Bulls. Big Cat of Barstool posted an Instagram today that a bunch of people are reacting to. Last 9 years, Bulls have 3 total playoff wins. Pistons and Magic, only 2 teams with less. That's bad company. And then 2 total playoff appearances, Kings and Hornets, only 2 teams with less. So just bad. You nailed it. They're consistently mediocre, which is the worst place to be in professional sports. You don't get a high draft pick, and then you also obviously don't succeed in the playoffs. So that's terrible. And then the Sox, man, I mean, if you've seen videos or pictures, I mean, there's literally like 100 people at these games for a 30,000 person stadium, literally 100, which is like, you know, and the weather's been pretty mild so far. It's not like these games have been 30 degrees. Like it's been a relatively mild summer so far. So, and I was looking up just the financials on the White Sox. So 2022 season, team that lost the most money, New York Mets. You can probably guess that. Steve Cohen just spending out of his mind to acquire talent. Padres, number 2, kind of same situation. They really went for it. And, you know, getting Machado and, of course, Tatis and Soto. But number 3, Chicago White Sox lost $53 million,
and that's based off of salary versus like just the
revenue. Just overall revenue brought in, and then overall expenses for the team. So kind of the question becomes, like, I know he's obviously a billionaire. He owns two teams and a second biggest market, third biggest market in this country. So he'll be okay. But like, you're stringing together a few of those, you're losing $300 million over 6 years. If that continues, like, at what point can you not stomach that?
Well, I think that point is now, right? So like, you can go all in, maybe, some people go all in 1 year, and then if it doesn't work, then they start shedding salary cap. Or you can be Steve Cohen owning the Mets and go all in multiple years in a row. But yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, I see Reinsdorf as kind of one of these old money owners, right? Where his net worth is like highly tied up in just to the value of these teams. Totally. He doesn't have kind of free cash flow going on from another business that he can pay the luxury tax, right? Like, the new owner of the Phoenix Suns, Matt Ishbia, like, he is a self-made billionaire. And so, he can trade for Kevin Durant, trade for Bradley Beal, know that he's going to go above the luxury tax, which comes with like a multiplier fee, and be okay with it because he's like, whatever, like, I want to try and win right now. Now, he may change his mind after a couple of years if they don't win. But the other thing with Jerry Reinsdorf is I've always thought that he is like loyal to a fault with his GMs, right? So he had Gar Forman and John Paxson as kind of co-GMs for the Bulls for way longer than they should have been, right?
Yeah.
Way longer than they should have been, right? Because, those are his guys. He finally gets rid of them. Now he's got this new guy in there, I can't pronounce his name, but, AK. And
from the Sixers, yeah.
Yeah. There's some stat that guy, the Bulls have not traded for a player in like the last like 3 years. So they've made trades, but it's like for like cash considerations or draft picks. They have not traded for a player in like the last 3 years. And you just know that he's probably going to be there for way longer than he probably should be. And then with the White Sox, he did the same thing with Kenny Williams, the GM. Kenny won that World Series in 2005, and then probably stayed on way too long. Now he's got Rick Hahn in there, probably going to stay way too long. And, it also could be the fact that Jerry doesn't want to, pay, two people at the same time, right? You fire these guys, you still got to pay them. So, it's just the tough part, and this is being a fan of any bad team, is just, it's one thing to be bad, but I feel like you have a direction, right? So if you're like the OKC Thunder and they were bad for a couple of years, but you could feel there was a direction they were going in, right? They were stacking draft picks, drafting well. They traded Paul George and got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I like, but I don't think anyone saw, what he's turned into. But at least there's like some direction there. So, it feels a little directionless
There's no direction.
Yeah. So, all right. So, is there a bright side on the situation, or is it just?
Yeah, I mean, with those two teams, there is a very loud voice of sell them both. We've met with I've met one of his best friends at a conference in New York City, and he was like, Jerry could give a rat's ass about the Bulls. Like, that is his son's team. He is a baseball guy through and through. Like, he literally could care less about the Bulls, which is just crazy to own a NBA team and one of what, 30 teams, and you just don't even care. It's wild. But yeah, I don't think there's any silver lining there. The Hawks, of course, we get Connor Bedard last year. Blackhawks get Connor Bedard last year. He's looked everything as advertised. And then the Cubs are formidable. I mean, they're in the hunt, so they're selling games out. So 2 out of 4, not bad. But of course, the same owner who owns the two lagging ones, not great. And then of course the Bears, owned by the McCaskies for 100 years.
Yeah. And then, to your point, or like, and Big Cat has been harping on this, it's the number 3 market in the country too, right? So, and when the Bulls won that play-in game, the crowd was going crazy, right? And everyone was just like, the United Center is such a fun place when the team is good. And it stinks that, there's just not that many, times to be good. And, but everyone's like, Jerry's happy because he got his extra revenue for the play-in game. And,
all Bulls are Bulls are profitable. Bulls sell out games, which is crazy because they've finished below 500. But right. Yeah, Bulls are still a very hot ticket.
Right.
Opposite situation than the White Sox.
Right. So yeah, So it's probably the Bulls that are paying for, you know, probably paid for that $50 million yes. Loss for the White Sox, because the Bulls don't pay the luxury tax. And so they get to keep, you know, teams that do pay luxury tax, that money gets split among the other owners. And then, yeah, whatever you get to keep from the rev share. I would be curious, though. So this is the last thing on this point, but there's been talk of, and it seems like it's pretty much a done deal, that the NBA, once the NBA gets this new TV deal, they will create two new expansion teams, one in Las Vegas, one in Seattle. Whoever the two people that own those expansion teams will pay an expansion fee that gets basically divided up among all the owners, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's just say someone pays $4 billion for the Vegas expansion team and someone pays $5 billion for the Seattle expansion team. That's $9 billion that will be split equally among all the owners. Players don't share that money. It's just like, hey, here's a couple hundred million dollars. Here you go. So I would be curious if perhaps Reinsdorf is waiting for that to sell the Bulls, because, you know, that's just a check, you know, a free check that you get cut into. But then the reason they do that is because then the owners start getting cut in, the new owners start getting cut into the TV deal. So if you're an owner, you're slicing the pie is like, currently 1/30th, and then it's going to go to 1/32nd. So, so I wouldn't be surprised if he waits for that check and then says, okay, I'm going to sell it. So, but speaking of buying or selling, I think it is time to get into a little stake or swap. First up, we'll be talking a little NHL. The New York Rangers, who had the best record in the whole league regular season, President's Cup trophy winners, currently 6.5-1 to win the Stanley Cup. Luke, we will start with you first. Are you staking or swapping the Rangers?
Yeah. This team is down to +650 to win the Stanley Cup. I'm swapping this team. There's too many good teams in the East. There are 10 teams in the NHL with under 15-1 odds right now. Like, that is how much lack of action the sportsbooks want to take on those top 10 teams. Like, they are basically scared of 10 total teams. So I just think it's going to be way too much of a gauntlet. Their best player is Artemi Panarin. He's a former Blackhawk. They call him Breadman, or just Bread, for his name sounding like Panera. He had 120 points in the regular season. Second highest on the Rangers was 77 for Chris Kreider. Like, he is the team. Like, it is all Artemi Panarin is the New York Rangers. And the goalies, Igor Shesterkin, he's pretty good. They have Jonathan Quick as a backup, who I do like, and he was on the Golden Knights. He was on the Golden Knights during our run last year. Mm-hmm. So I like him. So good, solid backup. Last time Rangers won the Cup, 1993. And then last time they won the East, 2013. So for all those reasons, I don't trust this team. Way better hockey teams in the East. I'll swap them.
Yeah. I will swap them as well. A couple things. One, so they're the second favorite to win the Stanley Cup. The first favorite, the top favorite, is the Carolina Hurricanes, who finished second in that division, even though the Rangers had the better record. The Hurricanes finished second. But the way the NHL playoffs work is that basically it's like kind of like you play within your division in the playoffs first. And so it's like it's not seed to, like, you know, 1-8, mm-hmm. Top to bottom. And so if the Rangers and Hurricanes both win their first round series, they play each other in the second round, which, you know, that's, I think a lot of people have complained about that. I think it's their way of creating rivalries, but rivalries. You know, but yes. Still, it's crazy that the top two favorites in the entire league for the Stanley Cup could play each other in the second round. So totally. that's a huge matchup for them. And then the other thing is, you know, in my, you know, beginner opinion of hockey betting, but it's all about the goalie, right? It all comes down to you know, who's the hot goalie. And I get how, you know, mediocre goalies during the regular season can get hot, right? One doesn't always lead the other, but in terms of the regular season, the Rangers goalie Igor Shesterkin ranked 11th in goals against average, 2.58 goals against average. The number one best goalie with the least 25 games played was the Panthers goalie, Anthony Stolarz. But then the second one is the Hurricanes goalie, Pedor Kolachekov. I'm probably going to get that name wrong. But point being, though, is that you know, you need to have an elite goalie to go far in the Stanley Cup. And 11th best in the regular season is probably not that. So for those reasons, I am staking the Rangers. And then, swapping the Rangers. And then finally, going to switch back to a little NBA action. The home teams went 8-0 in all the game ones over the weekend. But we're going to talk about one of those winning teams, the LA Clippers, currently 11-1 to win the NBA Finals. I will go first. I am swapping the Clippers. Look, they dominated the Mavericks in game one. They held Dallas to just 8 points in the second quarter of that game and obviously went on to win by double digits. Second half was a little closer to the first half. I just think that's because the Clippers, you know, took their foot off the gas pedal. But we say this all the time in NFL, also in hockey and basketball playoffs. Don't get caught up by just one game, right? Don't think that just because the Clippers beat the Mavs by, 20 or whatever, that they are 20 points better. It's just one game. I think this game, the series could go six or seven games. The Mavericks are still very live in this series. And then more importantly, Kawhi Leonard missed that game due to knee inflammation. And even if he does return at some point, like there's no guarantee he would stay in the lineup for the remainder of the playoffs. Knee inflammation is not something that you just kind of can, if you come back too early, it can come right back. Right. And if there's one player, if there's one superstar who you can just never count on in terms of availability, it is Kawhi Leonard. And if this team is going to make a serious run in the Western Conference playoffs, he needs to be playing as many games as possible. Like Paul George and James Harden, cannot carry this team past a, whether it be a, maybe they can beat the Thunder in the second round, but if they were to play like the Timberwolves or the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, like I just don't see it. The Clippers rank 12th in points per game, 10th in points allowed. Like, I just don't feel like they do any one thing really elitely. And they just rely on their superstars to have great individual games. And look, we've all seen James Harden in big playoff spots. And so, like I said, unless you could tell me that Kawhi Leonard's going to come back for game two and play the remainder of playoffs, I just think they're too easily beaten if Paul George is having an off night. So for those reasons, I am swapping the Clippers.
Sounds like we're both aligned here, which rarely happens. I am also going to swap the Clippers. It's you said it. Kawhi Leonard, I do not trust to be out there. He's just consistently unavailable, so I don't trust him. I also don't trust James Harden to play any type of defense whatsoever, and you need that in the playoffs. So don't trust either of those two guys in terms of Kawhi's availability and Harden's lack of desire to play any defense. So, yeah, I'm swapping this team as well.
Yeah. And look, last week we disagreed on my NBA pick of the New York Knicks. They were 45-1 on last week's pod. After just one game against the Sixers, they're down to 20-1. So, and again, like I said, Joel Embiid, probably not 100% healthy, and I think we've seen that. So Joel Embiid not 100% healthy. The Bucks, obviously, Dame looked great, but Giannis didn't play. So, still look out for those Knicks. I see an Eastern Conference Finals run in them. So that will do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy the NFL draft this week. There are a ton of tickets up for sale on PropSwap. And as we talked about, odds will be moving quick. So, get in now. You can sell right up until the pick is made. So head on over to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. Please make sure to subscribe to this podcast, leave us a rating, and we will talk to you next week.